Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What kind of year has 2009 been for the movies, and how much of the bumper crop of holiday season releases is actually worth seeing? Joining us with a promise to share their honest, unvarnished opinions, as if we could stop them. All three of my guests write about film and entertainment for a living. Chris Wagner is with the Dallas Morning News, Stephen Becker is with KERA's Art and Seek, and Chris Kelly is with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Guys, welcome back to Think.
Hey, Chris.
We have a lot of Chris's in here today, so we'll just... At least everyone knows which one I am.
Who let the Steven in? I don't know.
We need a Steven for balance. So how would you, and you guys can talk to each other and to me about this, how would you characterize this season's holiday movies as a group compared with the last couple of years?
Boy, that's going back long ways. Do you guys want to take that on?
I think this has been a better than usual Christmas season. I feel like we have a nice mix this year. I really liked things like It's Complicated for adults, there's Up in the Air, and for the kids, there's Avatar, which I didn't especially love. But it seems like there's a good broad mix of stuff out there and a little less pandering, I think, than usual this year.
And like, your favorite film, The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And The Fox, which I'm not a big fan of. But well. Yeah, no, there's good kids movies out there, not The Fantastic Fox, but The Princess and the Frog, which I thought was really nicely done.
Yeah, so did I.
And I think it's been actually a really solid year the whole year. The carrots have kind of been sprinkled throughout the year. Usually you get a lot of the good stuff opening at the end, but some of my favorite movies came out in August and June, and so I've really enjoyed this year. It's been fun to be a film critic.
Well, and I agree with you that...
Hang on, we need to turn on Steven's mic.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It's not you. Wow, we really do have mics only for Chris's.
Yeah.
That's the way it should go.
We're still working on this.
Well, Stephen just agrees with me, so I mean, it's clear.
What he said.
We're going to get this switched out in just a second. It's completely unintentional. 3D is back. I guess it's been back for a while, but now there is this like just craze over Avatar. Chris, you said you weren't crazy about it. Is it just about the effects? Is it not a good story?
I think that is what it is about. I think James Cameron has so completely kind of delved into these, you know, special effects. Into this special effects universe of his own creation. The movie is beautiful, and he creates a complete alternative universe filled with these magnificently sort of supple blue creatures. Looks great. I got so bored with the story. It suffers from Titanic syndrome. You're like, could you have spent a few million dollars on a screenwriter instead of the $480 million you spent on the production? I think people are going to like it. I can't imagine this is going to have the appeal that the Titanic would have.
I just want to see James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow get into it at the Oscars. The former spouses nominated for Best Director.
Well, Chris is talking about The Hurt Locker, which has been kind of collecting a lot of the critics' awards, and that's Catherine Bigelow's movie. Similarly, I think James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow share the same thing. That they're such a fan of kinesis and technique and artistry, and I don't know if those movies have the heart that I see in Up in the Air, that I see in even Inglourious Basterds, which were two of my favorites of the year.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. If you would like to join us, you can get online. At kera.org. Stephen, do we have you now?
I think I'm back.
All right, you're back.
Right.
Let's go back and characterize the year. Do you agree with Chris?
I do agree with Chris that the good films have been sprinkled out better this year, and there hasn't been that just... You know, December has not been this just dropping ground for Oscar bait. I mean, those things have been sprinkled out a little better, too. And there haven't been these just obvious films like The Reader and stuff like that from years past where it's like, okay, here's the Oscar
movie. Yeah. Well, Stephen, wouldn't you say, though, that the things that were the Oscar baits this year, like Nine and Lovely Bones, were kind of the biggest disappointments, too?
Especially Nine, I have to say. That was, you know, it seems like every year for the last few years we've had this big music, splashy musical, and... That one.
This is the remake of 8 1/2.
Correct.
Yeah. Sort of. It's based on the stage production that's sort of based on.
It's too much self-reflexive kind of. I haven't seen it. But
it's a lot of that. And it's a lot of Rob Marshall. It's like they were in the studio room and they said, Rob Marshall, you made Chicago. Can you just change the title to Nine and do it again?
Well, it looks just like Chicago. I mean, he used a lot of the same techniques as far as like having these song and dance numbers just appear out of a empty sound stage. But... You know, the songs just aren't that strong, and the singers singing them don't really raise them up to any higher level.
I thought the big problem was Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, it's finally answered the question, is there anything Daniel Day-Lewis can't do? And it's be a sexy Italian singer. There's a limit to his abilities.
He kind of sounds like Dracula when he sings, I think.
I thought he sounded like Zero Mostel and Fiddler on the Roof. But if you sort of combine Dracula and Zero Mostel, that's kind of what you get. And it's not fun.
It's certainly not sexy.
Can't wait to see it now.
Let's talk about Jim Carrey in A Christmas Carol. This is a great story, but it's one that everybody, including five-year-olds, have seen so many times. Does he get there? Does he make it interesting enough?
I mean, for me, I enjoyed A Christmas Carol. I didn't really enjoy it because of him. I mean, I was impressed by, it's always fun to see somebody play 8 or 9 different characters and go for the Peter Sellers,
Eddie Murphy,
Alec Guinness, certainly. It was fun. I thought they did a nice job with the effects. And, you know, Jim Carrey worked for me. He didn't do a whole lot of mugging, which is usually his trademark and his downfall. So I don't think he's going to get nominated for an Oscar or anything for it, but I enjoyed it.
For me, though, I mean, this is sort of the theme of the year for me, though, is technique and effects obliterating heart and storytelling. And that's what I felt was the problem with Christmas Carol. Zemeckis, much like James Cameron, has been kind of living in this world of his own creation with these stop-motion animated movies like Beowulf and Polar Express, and this is the third one. And there's no soul to these movies. They're so cold to watch, and that's kind of what I felt about Avatar, too.
Explain how stop-motion works. You're taking actors and you capture their movements and you create animation from
them? This is motion capture, right?
I'm sorry, motion capture. Stop-motion is like Coraline,
Right.
It's what Cameron did in Avatar.
Uh-huh. And my understanding was that they were working to fix the sort of dead eye problem. Mm-hmm. I guess it didn't happen.
It's better. Mm-hmm. I mean, the eyes were really dead in Polar Express, and they've come to life a little bit after the next two rounds. So it's getting there. By the fifth one, the eyes should really be looking sharp.
Yeah. I think in Avatar, the characters looked fairly, you know, lifelike for being created out of nowhere. But, you know, the thing I kept thinking watching it was it really looked like a video game. And we're kind of getting to this point where the line between movies and video games is becoming so close. And I think at a certain point, you know, directors like a guy like Jim Cameron are going to have to start asking, is this a story that's better told as a video game maybe? Because I was thinking, you know, if I were one of the Avatar guys, this would be awesome, but having to watch this sort of video game taking place wasn't quite as exciting.
And it's people will see this when it opens tomorrow, but it really is explicitly the camera's kind of behind the characters, and you're kind of moving through a world, and kind of things are popping out. You have to kind of, and the avatar kind of has to shoot at it. And I had the same reaction, which is this is like watching someone play a video game, and there's no engagement for me emotionally.
Well, even the name is video game like.
Yeah. The internet set, the bloggers that are really excited about this movie, and it really does hit that kind of audience, it seems.
Is there enough, forgive the term, like 3D porn? I mean, are there enough scenes? Because sometimes you go to a 3D movie and what you really want is just that experience.
Well, you know, this one, the 3D is a little bit more organic. It's not just like, I'm going to have a, you know, spear fly out of the screen.
Jaws coming
at you. It's not
you.
That kind of thing. And after a while, in a strange way, you kind of lose track of the fact that it's in 3D because maybe that is one of the better qualities of the movie is it does have this sort of immersive feel to it. It's not the traditional, like, let's see if we can just throw things at the audience and make them jump.
Sorry, I'm still thinking about 3D porn.
That will never be discussed as a particular topic, at least on this program. You can go to AM radio for that. Go to town. It is interesting, though. I saw this was like an IMAX film that was in 3D, and it was about the ocean and fish and everything. And it occurred to me, there wasn't a lot of pop-out stuff there, but it really did feel like you were there in a way that, especially with a documentary format, that was really extraordinary.
Yeah.
I think that's what Avatar achieves. Like, there aren't the spears coming at the audience, but there is this incredible sense of a kind of truly lived-in, dimensional world that you're looking at and you're kind of invited into. I just wish there was more heart to invite you into it. And I think Stephen hits it on the head. It's like that's the question for the future. At what point do you start saying, well, are these actual stories or are they video games or are they sort of interactive experiences? And maybe it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not of the age group that Avatar is clearly intended for, you know, and those kids might not want the story anymore.
What about none of you is also of the age group that the
the Twilight films are intended for.
Do they Chris work? Is, actually.
Do they work
big,
for anybody over 19
Taylor
years old?
Big Taylor Lautner fan here. I didn't think the first one was horrible. I did think the second one was horrible. I just thought that, you talk about needing a script. I just thought it was painful at times, and then it sort of became a Da Vinci Code sequel near the end. I was like, what movie am I in here? But I'm obviously not the demographic, so I have to roll with that and accept that.
And this might be grading on a curve a little bit, but when I saw it, to me, part of it was a more it was a larger movie watching experience because it was half watching the movie and half watching the crowd.
Yeah.
And if you can go and be entertained in that sense of watching these girls just
shriek.
About to explode with giddiness, I was entertained by that.
Every time Taylor Lautner took his shirt off,
which was like every 15
seconds. Which was every 15 seconds, the theater would be full of shrieks from teenage girls, which was fun.
I dismiss the fact that, you know, they make us sometimes see these movies with audiences to kind of experience them. But we were all at that screening and you really get it. You get it as a phenomenon. I mean, these girls are enraptured, and that means something. I mean, it might not be great art, but it's obviously affecting somebody, you know, and it works on some level.
There was just a real quick story. There was a girl sitting next to me that was right in the, you know, this was right her movie, and every so often I would feel like my chair was vibrating or something, and I looked over, and it was because her little foot was just tapping on the ground in anticipation. And it wasn't when something scary was about to happen. It was when the two main characters almost kissed. Oh, are they going to? And, man, she was into it.
You know, that series is all about suppressed hormones, and that screening was very much about suppressed hormones, you know, just getting right up to the edge and saying, oh my God, it's going to happen.
Is there like a code of behavior when you, and I've been to a few of these screenings myself, when you're there with other critics, do you withhold your laughter? Do you behave in a different way when there are other people around you, or do you not really care about that at all?
Well, I mean, when it's just critics, we can be, you know, jackasses to some extent. You know, at a promo screening like that, you're there with real people, and you can't quite be the jackass that you may want to be at times. You can't really do the Mystery Science Theater routine that's going in your mind.
Yeah, lots of narrated critics-only screenings.
Yes. I just want to say I behave impeccably all the time.
Yeah, right.
Your hormones are not suppressed. we had an hour yesterday on the history of South Africa, and Invictus came up. What do you guys think?
I haven't seen it. I'm not all that. I'm impressed that Clint Eastwood is still making movies. But I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, the title should be "I'm Not Dead Yet," and that's the only that's the only notable thing about this movie. I mean, it's so
really it's
boring,
that's disappointing.
Boring, boring, boring.
Well, Chris and I—it's funny. Chris Kelly and I were talking about it just the other day, and it just screams like this is a movie that you are supposed to want to see. And when I finally saw it, it's a pretty just conventional sports movie, and you know the big game is the big thing at the end. And
is it Oscar bait? Does it into that Oscar bait discussion?
It from the previews, you would think so, but then when I saw it, I guess the thing I was left with is I really like Clint Eastwood, and I don't know how many more movies the guy has left in him, and he's 79 or something, and I want him to spend his time making really good movies.
Yeah, this is just generic sports movie melodrama, and you can't even follow the sport unless you're a rugby PhD. I mean, I didn't know what I was looking at.
Thank God for all the shots of the scoreboard.
So you're directing your invective at Invictus. We'll be back in a minute with Stephen Becker, Chris Wagner, and Chris Kelly. We're talking about holiday movies 2009. You're welcome to throw in your 2 cents at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about holiday movies for this season, at least movies in the holiday season. They're not all holiday movies. Stephen Becker is here from Art and Seek. Chris Wagner is with the Dallas Morning News, and Chris Kelly with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk about The Lovely Bones. Will people who loved the novel find anything to like in the movie?
I haven't read the novel, and I had problems with the movie, but I also found some of it just visually rapturous to the point that my problems kind of went away. But I know I've talked to Chris about this, who has read the novel, and he said that the definitely problems in connecting the non-Earth part to the Earth part.
Yeah, I mean, I think people who read the novel are going to be really disappointed because the novel holds those two notions in balance, heaven and Earth. And she's there. She's a present figure watching all the other characters go about their earthly lives. The movie doesn't find a visual correlative, and so you're just kind of watching a bunch of scenes. Some of them are beautiful. It's one of the most beautifully shot movies of the year, and both the heaven scenes and the Philadelphia scenes. But it seems like, to me, one of those movies without a dramatic center. And it's a tough book. I just kind of kept sitting there going, this is an unadaptable book, ultimately.
You know, I haven't seen the movie, but it occurred to me when I heard that they were making one, I thought, how are they going to do that? And it sounds like they...
Yeah, I think people are going to be disappointed. I think the studio, you know, has kind of scaled back its ambitions. It doesn't seem like they're pushing it too hard for the Oscars anymore. It just hasn't quite registered with critics yet, so...
Yeah, and even not having read the book, there was I could tell there was sort of an emotional core that was missing that I kept waiting for that never really got there.
But I mean, I agree with Chris. It's Peter Jackson. He's so gifted. You know, like, I mean, there's scenes in this. There's a great Hitchcockian scene where the girl's finding the book and that the serial killer has. And there's some real nice stuff in it. But wait till it turns up on HBO. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
I just thought it was an interesting show of restraint in a way that it's very obvious that they decided to make this a PG-13 movie for a book that very easily could have been an R movie if they... And so it was kind of interesting, and obviously the money that they spent on it, they were never going to make that an R movie, but they... It definitely wasn't, you know, knowing what the movie was about, or the book was about, it definitely wasn't as grisly as I kind of assumed that it was going to be.
Of the many movies, though, that I've seen recently, such as Fantastic Mr. Fox... where I walked out and said, who is this audience that this movie is for? I walked out of Lovely Bones, and who on earth is that movie made for? Is it for kids? Is it for adults? It's just, they just didn't really get the concept, I think, and missed it.
But you guys all did like the new Disney movie, first African-American Disney princess in history, and a huge amount of hype over this thing. What'd you think?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I think, it's kind of an easy analysis, but I think that Pixar's touch is rubbing off on the rest of Disney, if this is an indication. I think John Lasseter brings something.
Is that warmth, or what do you
mean
by that?
Yeah, it's heart, it's timing, it's warmth, it's wit.
I think there's also a visual ambition, and I'm thinking of the Almost There number, which is sort of rendered as a kind of a series of Harlem Renaissance-style paintings. My jaw dropped. I couldn't believe how imaginative visually it was. And that's what, when you think of Up, which was one of my favorite movies of the year, that amazing silent montage in the beginning.
That was unbelievable.
Where 5 or 6 minutes in this man's life is rendered.
I get chills thinking about it.
Yeah, and that might be the best 5 minutes of a movie this year.
That's amazing to say about a Disney animation. Yeah. That really is.
That may be the best 5 minutes of any film I've ever seen. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that kind of ambition is applied to Princess and the Frog, which I think is the best hand-drawn they've done in probably since The Little Mermaid or something. It's really a very accomplished movie.
We have an email here from Jennifer who says, after all the presents are unwrapped and dinner eaten, my family and I usually go to the movies on Christmas night. What is my best bet for a fun family movie when I go to choose among what's playing?
Princess and the Frog, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of anything better offhand.
I've never understood this because that's what a multiplex is for. You can all go to see different movies.
Merry Christmas. We've had enough of you.
You
get away from your family.
There's 10 different auditoriums. You'll find something for everybody. I actually thought Sherlock Holmes isn't so bad. I mean, it's not great, but it's kind of a fun kind of right over the plate movie.
Yeah, is it true he doesn't wear the deerstalker
cap? He doesn't, no.
Yeah, and he never says the elementary, my dear Watson. But yeah, I would definitely throw my weight behind Sherlock Holmes. It was fun, you know, in a very, like, just like the emailer said, I would kind of want to relax and after a big meal and just let a movie sort of wash over me. Because it's interesting because it's a mystery, obviously. They're trying to solve this crime. But it's not the kind of movie where you can really solve the crime along with the protagonist because, you know, Holmes is supposed to be 50 steps ahead of everybody anyway. And so a lot of the stuff when he sums it all up for you at the end is stuff that you never even saw in the movie anyway. So don't worry if you're not following. He'll sum it up for you at the end. But I liked it, though. I mean, it was just fun.
Does Watson never get to say, "What up, Holmes?"
I don't think so.
You know, it's funny because they tried to sort of modernize it, and they almost got halfway there. There's this strange scene where Holmes is in a bare-knuckle boxing match, and it's never explained. You're like, what is he doing?
It's a Guy Ritchie movie.
It's a Guy Ritchie movie. So it's a little bit, you know, betwixt and between. They didn't quite completely figure out the concept before they started, but it's fine. It's fun.
I will say the one complaint I had about it was Rachel McAdams. I thought it was pretty miscast. Mm. And part of it is that, you know, she's what, 20 years younger than Robert Downey Jr.
Isn't this Hollywood gold?
Yeah, well, I know, and I realize that's every movie in Hollywood, but she's supposed to be this kind of, you know, on the same level adversary. They're supposed to match wits and stuff. And when he is sort of outsmarting her through the movie, it's like, well, no kidding. He's got 20 years on her. I mean, that makes sense. So I don't know. I would have liked to have seen somebody a little more on his level, I suppose.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jim in Dallas. Hey, Jim.
Has anybody seen the Jeff Bridges movie? Is this going to be another wrestler and gratuitous nomination, and then we turn around and watch George Clooney run away with Up and Away?
Yeah, I've seen it. Jeff Bridges is very good in it. I think he's always been good. He's kind of.
What's the title of this movie?
It's called Crazy Heart. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges play, and it is very wrestler like. He plays
the wrestler too.
It is the wrestler too. He plays a beaten down country singer songwriter. He's fantastic. The music is fantastic. T-Bone Burnett did the score. I think he'll get nominated for an Oscar as well. The movie's a little formulaic, but Bridges is fantastic, and if you like twang, and if you like singer-songwriters, then it's definitely a film for you.
And it's definitely a movie where the character goes on an emotional journey, and they end up in a very different place than they were at the beginning. And it was a lot of fun watching him make that transformation. And like you said, the music is, T-Bone Burnett, who wrote it with Stephen Bruton, the Fort Worth guitarist who died earlier this year. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot about the music from now until March.
And it's scary how much he looks like Kris Kristofferson at times.
Oh, yeah.
You do a double take and you feel like you're actually watching Kristofferson.
Not that anyone's required to, but if you were choosing between It's Complicated and Everybody's Fine, because they seem to be in sort of the same genre.
They're in the same genre, but they're not in the same class by a mile.
I haven't seen Everybody's Fine.
Oh, God, don't waste your time.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed It's Complicated, though.
It's kind of surprising. I think a lot of people, if you see the commercial for It's Complicated, you'll think, oh, this is going to be some broad, silly farce.
This is Nancy Myers, right?
And much like Nancy Myers movies, this woman is famous for making it seem like everybody in America lives in these Pottery Barn mansions and has these fabulous jobs. They own bakeries and they're architects and... But this one taps into real emotion, and Meryl Streep is terrific as this divorced woman who begins an affair with her ex, Alec Baldwin, and also falls for an architect played by Steve Martin. And I was sitting there thinking, this movie just earned its title. You know, it's a genuinely complicated mainstream movie, and I was completely arrested by it, really, really surprised.
And the silly farce stuff is actually very funny, too. Yeah. I mean, it has some really great set pieces that are sort of influenced by more adolescent humor, but you get to see these, 50-somethings.
Alec Baldwin naked on a webcam.
Yes, there is that. it's a really fun, but it's also, Chris's Pottery Barn point is very apt. The Meryl Streep character has this amazing kitchen. The first thing you say is, wow, that's a great kitchen. And then she's like, I need a new kitchen. And so she goes, I'm going to hire Steve Martin to build me a new kitchen.
Well, and we were talking afterwards about how I really enjoyed it in the sense that it was very interesting to watch a movie about people in their 50s and 60s, and that's where the complication comes in. But so many movies are about this, like Twilight, it's the first love. And those are interesting, but it's been done a million times. And it was nice to see people who have lives lived and how that really does affect you know, their romantic lives going forward.
Yeah, there's something to be said for life experience when it comes to comedy.
I thought Streep was just wonderful.
She is.
And if she wasn't about to get an Oscar for Julie and Julia, they'd be giving it to her for this. You know, I mean, it's just a terrific performance. And a performance where she doesn't rely on the accents or the costumes. It was just really naked and lovely and straightforward. It's a great performance. Really, really, real terrific.
Agreed.
So she's vindicated for Mamma Mia.
That's asking a lot.
Yeah. Let's go next on the phones to Rowlett and speak with Samaya. Hi, Samaya.
Hello. I was wondering what's y'all's opinions about the film adaptation of The Road by John Hillcoat?
Cormac McCarthy, no?
Mm-hmm.
This may inspire an argument. I thought it was the worst film of the year.
Really?
And I actually liked it. So
yeah.
Let's get it on. Let's bring it outside.
I thought this was a classic case of we're going to make a movie so miserable, so uniquely unpleasant, so unrelentingly gray or brown or gray-brown in the more complex scenes, and we're going to confuse people into thinking this is art.
That
is not the book. The book is a real sort of humanist plea. The book taps into a humanism, and it's about a father trying to protect his son, trying to give his son the tools to carry on, and you never doubt in the book the reason why they're carrying on. 5 minutes into this movie, I just thought, shoot yourselves and let me go home and watch cable. This is misery.
It's a tough book to film, but I thought they did a fairly good job with it.
What did you like about it?
I like the sparseness. I thought Mortensen was really good. I thought the kid was really good. It didn't have the same emotional impact as the book, certainly, but movies very infrequently do. I thought they did a pretty admirable job with a pretty thankless task.
Steven, do you want to like break the tie here?
Well, I was just going to say I'm going to actually go see The Road this weekend.
We'll have to check back in with you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Will you write about it on Art and Seek so we can see what you have to say?
Yeah.
All right. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Ed in Arlington. Hey, Ed.
Hi. I'd like to ask the Chris crew down there if they have any insight why, in the movie you brought up a few minutes ago, Crazy Heart, why Kris Kristofferson wasn't cast in the lead, because he is has a musical career and he's also done quite a bit of acting, whereas if I'm correct, Jeff Bridges is going to have to lip sync his way through the whole thing.
No, he actually sings and plays guitar.
So does Colin Farrell. Actually,
he's terrific.
They acquit themselves pretty well. Actually, I never thought about that. Kristofferson's not a bad actor.
I think Kristofferson would be too.
He's
old
a little too
part,
old. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're talking. It's.
I mean, that's another 15 years on Jeff Bridges,
right,
and he falls in love with Maggie Gyllenhaal,
who is like 30, right. I guess. So that would be a pretty big jump.
Yeah, if you think there's an age difference between Robert Downey Jr. and Rachel McAdams, wait till you see this movie.
Have we already talked about Bad Lieutenant?
Not yet.
Bad Idea.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I do want to.
This is the remake of the Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, Werner Herzog. Yeah. I'm a big Herzog fan.
I heard there was like talking iguanas or something that kind of turned me
off. Gratuitous iguana cam.
Nicolas Cage is always, and I know you guys haven't seen it, but he's always these days like a risk. You know, you put him in any role and you run the risk of making something that seems really just odd.
Well, I hear it's very odd. It's supposed to be loopy. The thing, Nicolas Cage disappoints me because he just seems to do films, and I know it's a cliche, but he seems to be after a paycheck half the time. And I think he's a very gifted actor, and I've just seen him in so much crap in the last 10 years.
Did you see the trailer for the medieval movie he's
in?
No, yeah.
I did not.
Nice. Yeah, paycheck.
Well, he's going to be making more of those paycheck movies with his castles and whatnot.
I mean, I like my paychecks too, so I don't want to be hypocritical. I just think he's a very gifted actor, and I'd like to see him keep challenging himself. And I plan on seeing Bad Lieutenant. I hear it's loopy and fun.
What about Up in the Air?
That's my number one of the year. Actually,
this is the George Clooney film, and it's like the recession movie.
Yeah, it's a recession. It's funny. It actually, the novel came out in 2001. I think pre-9/11, and so we weren't in a recession then, but it feels very much of the time, and at the same time it kind of feels like a 30s or 40s screwball comedy with a very dark undertone. I just thought it was...
Well, Clooney was born for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was very, very moving, and I thought the two actresses, Anna Kendrick and Vera, is it Farmiga or Farmiga?
Farmiga,
I thought they were both just fantastic. And it's tough to see people get fired in a film. And these are people who actually did lose their job and were told that they were fired. They're not actors. They went out and found people who had been sacked recently. And those are some very emotionally overwhelming scenes.
Yeah, lest that sound like a total beatdown. The movie's really charming.
It really is. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be
playful and it really is like the old Preston Sturges screwball comedies, which have these sort of undercurrents of melancholy, like Sullivan's Travels.
Even Billy Wilder, to some extent.
It's a very sophisticated movie. I didn't quite love it. I felt like it could have been a little bit more emotional, but it's terrific, and it'll do very well at the Oscars, deservedly so.
Yeah, in another way, it's a little like It's Complicated in that these are people who have lives. I mean, Clooney's this sort of road warrior who's spent virtually his entire adult life in airplanes and hotels. And he, along the way, starts to figure out ask the question, is there more to life than my loyalty to my job? And I think there's between the people getting laid off and then watching Clooney's character and the two women characters, there's going to be a lot of that people can really grab onto and associate with. They'll see parts of themselves in a lot of these characters.
Yeah, it's about a guy who's worked all his life to cut himself off from emotional contact, and things happen that kind of draw him back in, and it's not a particularly easy process. But again, it's a funny movie, so there you go.
And we've been talking about this. We've been talking about new things. Precious has been out forever now, but people are still going. It's still up in the theaters. Is it too depressing for to see Christmas afternoon?
That's a tough one. I wouldn't see it Christmas afternoon unless you're have an odd idea of Christmas.
The Kelly family's off in different theaters. So
yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe you can head off to your own little multiplex corner and find it. No, it's a very strong film. And I really hope Lee Daniels gets an Oscar nomination. I was a little disappointed that he didn't get a Golden Globe nomination. Not that those are particularly important.
We are talking about holiday movies for the season 2009. If you want to join the conversation with Stephen Becker, Chris Wagner, and Christopher Kelly, you can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
My name is Clarice Precious Jones. I want to be on the cover of a magazine. I wish I had a light-skinned boyfriend with real nice hair. But first, I want to be in one of them BET videos.
You're a dummy. Don't nobody want you. Don't nobody need you. School ain't gonna help none.
Directing a movie is a very overrated job. We all know it. You just have to say yes and no. What else do you do? Nothing. Maestro, should this be red? Yes. Green? No. More extras? Yes. More lipstick? No. Yes, no. Yes, no. It's directing.
Be Italian. Be Italian.
OMG, I thought he'd never leave.
What are you doing here?
I've never really known how to live without you.
And it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
I'm having an affair with a married man. You're not saying.
Oh, yes, I am.
Turns out, I'm a bit of a slut.
Little montage there of some of the movies we've been talking about this hour. Precious, followed by Nine, and then It's Complicated. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. My guests this hour are film and entertainment writers all, Chris Wagner of the Dallas Morning News, Christopher Kelly of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and Stephen Becker of KERA's Art and Seek. We have not yet talked about Tom Ford, the clothing designer, who has directed his first film this year, A Single Man.
This is one that Chris Kelly and I are at odds on. I really liked it. I felt, it it's one of the best looking movies, as you would probably imagine. I mean, it looks like a movie that was directed by a fashion designer, but in all the best ways. It takes place in the early 60s, like 61 or 62. So it's in that sort of Mad Men sweet spot. And it's about this guy who's a college professor who has just lost his longtime partner in a car accident. And he's kind of planning his suicide, I suppose. And anyway, along the way, things happen. He meets new people, maybe changes his outlook on life. But it's another one of those movies where the character goes on an absolute journey. It has a very surprise ending that I certainly won't give away. Mm-hmm. But it looked great. And I mean, I will say I'm very interested to see what Tom Ford's going to do next.
It's funny because I thought it was a movie that looks like it's directed by a fashion designer in the very worst way, because to me it's so fussy, it's so impeccable that there's no sort of soul to it. And Firth is very good and tries to give it that soul, but Tom Ford, I just thought the direction kind of undermined it. It's just such a precious conceit, and I just kind of got bored with it.
There are times where he is a little heavy-handed. He does this little tech. I mean, he does a lot of with the tones of each scene to sort of replicate how the main character's feeling. It'll be real cool looking blues and grays when he's down, and real warm to exaggerated points. He basically puts makeup on this, you know, one student's face, and that was a little heavy-handed, but I liked it.
I wonder if that's the result of someone who's been doing something else for decades and has always thought how great it would be if I made a movie, and then all the great ideas he's ever had, he tried to put into this movie.
It's completely Tom Ford's movie. I mean, it's a first-time movie that illustrates the auteur theory perfectly. I mean, it's exactly his sensibility. It's a Gucci ad as reinvented as a feature film. And I think some people are going to love it. I'm not dismissing that, and I'm not dismissing Colin Firth, who's really quite good, but it just was not my cup of tea.
So this time of year, a lot of people are shopping for DVDs for presents. What's on your list this year, or what would be on your list if you didn't already own them? And it doesn't have to be brand new things. It can be classics as well.
Well, I mean, some of the on the brand new side, The Hangover is out. Came out last week, I believe.
This is the Ed Helms.
Yeah, and yeah. The What Happens in Vegas stays in Vegas movie. To me, I like a good raunchy comedy when it's well written. And when the spirit is there, and I think that this falls into that category. District 9 comes out next week, one of the kind of surprise hits of the year, sort of an apartheid allegory, which I don't think the other Chris liked a whole lot. But
meh.
How do you spell meh?
Yeah. M-E-H. My favorite movie of the year, which I don't think Chris liked, came out of DVD, I think, yesterday, Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
I thought Quentin Tarantino's film was such a audacious attempt to reinvent the World War II movie, and recast it kind of as a World War II movie in which the Jewish figures get to be the tough guys and get to triumph. And I thought it was such an exultant and imaginative and wonderful movie, and so witty and complex. That's far and away my favorite film of the year, so I would recommend that.
I liked parts of it, but for the most part, I was just asking, what's the point? I mean, I get the whole, you know, Jewish revenge against Hitler thing. I just didn't think they did a whole lot with it. I mean, like, I was kind of like, why are they scalping these guys? What's up with that? What's the story here? And I just don't really think it took much time to dig into that kind of thing. Then again, it's not really the kind of movie it is.
Well, I think in a Quentin Tarantino movie, the question is, why not scalp these
guys? Yeah, exactly.
You know, if my friends or family are listening, the DVD that I would really am looking for, and I think it comes out this month, is It Might Get Loud, which is a documentary that came out in August. It was kind of here and gone, and it's the most simple concept for a doc. Get Jimmy Page and The Edge and Jack White to sit around in a studio and talk about playing guitars. And it's definitely for someone who is into rock music and sort of the history of rock music, and also just about but the real interesting part about it was just listening to these very different guitar players. All three of them are very different, talking about their approach to playing the guitar. I mean, it was very insightful.
I believe it comes out week after next.
All right.
So you'll have to get a gift card or
something.
Yeah,
gift card.
Get a voucher.
Do you like the feel good holiday movies? Are they something that everybody should sort of endeavor to see? And is there one this year that is particularly good?
I'd put It's Complicated in that category. It's a lot of fun, and it's fun for grown ups. And you can't say that about a whole lot of films these days. It's a funny kind of, I wouldn't say risky, but slightly naughty movie for adults. And that's a kind of a dying breed these days.
And for kids, I think Princess and the Frog is pretty feel good. I felt pretty good afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was singing.
Let's go next on the line to Gina in Fort Worth. Hi, Gina. I think Gina might be ordering some fast food. Hi, Gina.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, please.
I have a question for you about Brothers. I'm curious what the reviews are on Brothers.
I just saw it the other night. I finally caught up with it. And while not a great film, Tobey Maguire is stunningly good as this guy who goes to Afghanistan, commits a horrible, horrible act, and has to come home and deal with his family, all of whom thought he was dead. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays his brother and Natalie Portman his wife. It is a little slow going, a little, there's a few sort of bumpy patches that don't really work, but Tobey Maguire takes you on a really, really impressive journey. I'd never quite realized how gifted an actor he is. It was really impressive.
I haven't seen Brothers, but I'm wondering if we're starting to get to, and I realize Brothers is about Afghanistan and The Hurt Locker is more about Iraq, but I wonder if we're starting to get to a point where we're finally making some pretty good war, you know, movies that are into those wars. I mean, we've been trying for several years, but both
and
of
The Messenger as well is kicking out.
The Messenger,
out.
Sure.
I don't
fantastic.
Know if that's opened yet here. Has that opened yet
yes.
here?
Yes, yeah, about a month ago.
And that's with Ben Foster and Woody Harrelson, also a very well-done movie. Samantha Morton is terrific in that. I think you're right. I think we're finally getting a little bit of the distance. And the thing I love about The Hurt Locker was it took you to a part of the war that you didn't know. I mean, it's about a bomb diffuser, and it feels like a documentary you're watching. So I think we're finally getting enough distance so that we could really kind of tell the truthful stories.
I think audiences are getting the distance. I actually thought there were some pretty decent war films in the previous couple of years, but nobody went to go see them. I think maybe now at this point, nobody really saw The Hurt Locker either, so I don't know if we're quite there
yet. Or The Messenger.
Or The Messenger, unfortunately. Messenger, I would definitely seek out The Messenger. It's a very strong film.
I wouldn't be surprised if they re-release The Hurt Locker once it gets a bunch of Oscar nominations.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen Me and Orson Welles?
Yeah.
Mm. What'd you think?
Christian McKay is fantastic. The guy who plays Orson Welles just really gets the intonations and the ego down, the ferocious ego. It's a fun film. It's a fun look at 30s New York and kind of behind the scenes with a tyrannical and brilliant theater director and, of course, film director as well. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. Richard Linklater.
I will say, though, if I had paid money to see that, I would have probably been a little bit annoyed.
Yeah, but we don't do that.
We don't do that. It's a fine little movie. Wait till you can see it on cable.
You're shaking your head, Stephen.
Haven't seen it.
You haven't seen
I
it?
I have it. It's in the queue.
Pop it in there. The yeah. queue gets very long this time
yeah.
of year.
Yeah, it's. We were just talking before that I think we've all seen about 10 or 15 movies in the last week or so. So.
Yeah, does there come a point where you're like, God, not another movie. Let me go for a run or read a book or something.
Oh, yeah, that's when you go for a run or read a book.
or fall asleep, as I did it at the Pedro Almodóvar movie the other day.
So did you not like it, or were you just retired?
I was in the middle of two movies, and the theater was a little too warm, as Stephen can attest, and the seats were incredibly comfortable. And
recliners are hard to deal
with. The next thing I knew, the closing credits were rolling, and I thought, oh, that was an interesting movie, all 30 minutes I saw of it.
So. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, too. And in a way, for a critic, this time of year is almost like going to a film festival, where a lot of times, especially if you go to a really great one like a Toronto or something like that, you're seeing just one really top-notch movie after another, and in a way you don't have the time to sit back and really appreciate them because you're on to the next one because you got to slam them all in. So there's some of these, like Up in the Air is certainly one that I'm looking forward to rewatching when I have a little more time to just digest it.
I've seen it 3 times already.
You have a lot of time.
Somebody's got some time in his hands.
I get hooked on certain movies and will rewatch them, pretty regularly.
Speaking of rewatching, I've heard that there is in the works a 3D version of Titanic coming.
Wow.
But that people are wondering whether it will work because
did everybody live at the end?
Well, no. No, I mean, I think it's the original movie and it's going to be reprinted or whatever, but it was women who went to see it over and over and not the guys who want to see the ship sink.
Right. That guy is just so in love with those technology things, James Cameron. I wish him well. I mean, I'm glad there's people like him making movies. I just wish he would, you know, maybe not spend $500 million on Avatar and give $50 million to a smaller project that he could produce, you know.
And again, he is the king of the world.
Yeah, but I'm kind of glad you brought up Titanic in a way, because it's interesting to look at that and Avatar next to each other, both directed by the same person, and and they both are these big special effects movies, you know, 10 years apart. And the reason that Titanic works where Avatar doesn't is that in the end, it's still centered on this relationship between two people. And it couldn't be more simple. Whereas Avatar, it's like, I don't even know. It's all over the place.
There's a real beating heart to the relationship in Titanic. And here, there's a beating computer cursor, you know?
Right.
It's like all you feel like you're watching is two digitally created creatures. He's trying to do the same thing. I mean, there's a love story at the center of Avatar, and it just, you don't feel it. I felt nothing watching it.
And in Titanic, all of those special effects really serve the story and amplify the emotions involved, whereas in Avatar, they just kind of muddy the waters.
Avatar is not going to be a date movie that people go and see over and over again like Titanic was.
Well, unless you date fellow nerds.
Yeah. I don't discount the nerds.
Don't hate.
Did you guys see Planet 51?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Similar themes in a way to District 9. The the aliens are not the threat we are. I think Planet 51 treats it a lot more playfully than District 9, which is actually a very gross and violent movie that I liked very much.
I think those of us who are critics who get to pick the movies we review need other people to tell us if a children's movie is good before we'll subject ourselves to it. And that one, people were just saying it was just flat out dreadful. So
Oh, and Alvin and the Chipmunks. We should talk about this.
The Squeakquel.
The Squeakquel.
The Squeakquel.
Let's not.
I hate to say, is it worth seeing? But I don't even want to know because I don't want to take my kids to that.
Well, Chris, let me tell you.
I know Stephen wants to do his Chipettes impression of them singing All the Single Ladies. But
right.
Do you have one?
No. Well, you know, there's...
We'll get one off mic later.
You know, the thing about movies that are made for kids is there are movies that are made strictly for kids, like an Alvin and the Chipmunks. I haven't seen it, but I'm guessing. And then there are movies that are made for kids that adults can enjoy too, like, you know, Fantastic Mr. Fox, I think, which some of us liked, some of us hated, but where, you know, kids and adults can both pull something out of. And I thought Fantastic Mr. Fox was one of those movies.
I think Pixar is at the point now where they're making animated films for grown-ups that kids will also like. They've sort of flipped the equation upside down, which I love.
Well, it's a good observation.
And at a certain point, somebody got smart and realized that it's the parents that buy the tickets.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You might as well
entertain them. And the merchandise
and
everything else.
Right. Got to make them happy.
No Miyazaki on the horizon? Nothing new?
There was one this year, Ponyo.
That's right.
Which I haven't seen Ponyo on the cliff.
I haven't seen either. Love Miyazaki, though. I will definitely make it to that.
Yeah, even if you turn off the sound and just watch everything, it's extraordinary. Well, we have talked this hour with our favorite critics of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Stephen Becker of KERA's Art and Seek, Chris Wagner of the Dallas Morning News, and Chris Kelly from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Thank you very much for joining us, guys. It's always great to have you here.
Thanks for
your time.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.